Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Warning, this week's episode is not safe for work. So quit. Fuck that job anyway.
This week's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by Aura Frames, Mint Mobile, and by the new diet version of Mormonism, Lessmanism. Lessmanism. Because even the Mormons think they're a little much. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
My name's Eric Baer, and I'm a teacher in Alberta, Canada, a province that is currently trying to conservatize education and ban books from libraries, thanks to the provincial leader, Danielle Smith. And I can assure you that we did, in fact, evolve from filthy monkey men. And women, I guess. Fucking hell, Danielle.
Thursday.
It's April 30th.
And it's Hairstyle Appreciation Day.
Nice. Aerodynamic. Preach. Done.
I'm No Illusions.
I'm Eli Bosnick.
I'm Heath Enright. And from Dr. Oz's New Jersey, ooh, and Auburn, Michigan, and Waycross, Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
On this week's episode, are they still Mormon stories if you get sued for saying true stuff?
We learn about Satan's plan to corrupt the world using a high school marching band in suburban Indiana.
And Christians will accidentally admit that their religion doesn't work again.
But first, the diatribe.
Okay, so here's how much I will grant the conspiracy theorists. When the news first broke, and we first learned that there had been a shooting at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and all we knew was that the president had been evacuated, nobody was hurt, the gunfire was on another floor, and nobody in the room witnessed the incident, it was entirely reasonable to think, I wonder if this is some staged bullshit. Right? Like, given what we know of the Trump administration, the idea that they would fake an assassination attempt to justify the fucking ballroom is not, in my opinion, an unreasonable proposition. It's an unreasonable conclusion, but it's not an unreasonable to think. It made sense to hold out for more information before you settled on your opinion here. But, and this is a huge fucking but, if that were the case, if it were fake, it would have broken apart within hours, if not minutes. Unless you believe that faking an assassination attempt is in a ballroom full of fucking journalists, no less, is the one goddamn thing that the Trump administration can do adeptly, you have to admit that if it were staged, there would be substantial evidence to that effect almost immediately. Right? And I'm not talking about somebody talking it like eating a salad a little too nonchalantly or a mysterious figure peering in from off stage. I'm talking about eyewitnesses disagreeing on what happened. I'm talking about the suspect's cousin going on the record saying he was a right-wing nutter. I'm talking about Secret Service agents going off the record to tell journalists that it was faked. And even beyond that kind of direct evidence, of which there would be a fucking flood, mind you, we would also see the telltale signs of Trumpian stupidity. As friend of the show Thomas Smith pointed out, the shooter's manifesto would have said something like, I and my trans Antifa brothers and sisters hate freedom too much to let such a brilliant man with such normally sized hands keep making America so great again. Right, the dude would have run into the room screaming, Comey sent me. Trump would tweet out, well, that sure wasn't fake. And yet, despite that lack of evidence and despite years and years of debunking the other guys when they engage in this, well, isn't that convenient pseudo thinking, I have seen a goddamn avalanche of idiocy from our side of the aisle confidently declaring that this is a false flag operation. And they're doing the whole bit, right? They're picking through videos of the event and going, well, explain this anomaly then. They're inexpertly matching faces to those photographed at other incidents and claiming crisis actors. They're pressing yarn into cork boards with pushpins, demanding answers for shit too convoluted to form into questions. In a word, they're roganizing. And I know that I'm actually talking to some of you roganizers right now. I know because a bunch of listeners have sent me links to bullshit roganized videos from depressingly prominent left-wing influencers. A bunch of people have sent me blog posts disguised as news articles doing all the cherry-picking, bad faith, unsound bullshit that we've come to expect from Alex Jones. And I need you to know that if "but it is awfully convenient, isn't it?" is your best argument, you have no argument. I mean, hell, you could even be right and you would still deserve me giving you all this shit about it, because if it comes out later that this was, in fact, a false flag operation, you'd still have gotten there for the wrong reasons. It doesn't just matter where you get it. It matters how you got there. And if the path there is littered with non sequiturs and logical fallacies, it's the wrong fucking path. That's why skepticism has to be a process rather than a set of conclusions. I mean, if you're an atheist because your Ouija board told you there was no God, I guess I'm glad you landed on the right answer, but you're listening to the wrong podcast. But of course, this isn't actually new, right? Our side has been flirting with this shit ever since that nearsighted dude shot him in Pennsylvania. I've seen plenty of people zooming in on his ear looking for a fucking bullet hole or whatever the hell they expect to find there. As if the fact that he exaggerated how bad his boo-boo was something in need of explanation from Donald fucking Trump. They're demanding to know what made him bleed, as though an 80-year-old dude on industrial solvent blood thinners and mega doses of aspirin needs an excuse to bleed. Look, I know that it sucks that our side has to fight with the truth and their side doesn't. Right? We're always at a disadvantage. We're always fighting with one hand tied, but it has to stay that way. And not just because of some deep-rooted sense of fucking fairness. It's because truth is the very fucking thing we're fighting for in the first place. To give that up is to give up. So stay vigilant, demand sources, be skeptical. Don't believe it just because it's fucking convenient or just because you want it to be true. And don't make us burn the fucking city down to save it.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight are the Pinky and Inky to my Clyde, Heath Enright, and Eli Bosnick. Fellas, are you ready to think outside the box?
And I'm on the other side of the box. Ah, box is a flat circle.
Yeah, and I'm just happy to be part of the pack, man.
There you go. And while we set out in search of our Blinky, we're going to pause for a word from our first sponsor this week. Aura Frames.
It's Tim. Hi, I'm Wooldash Amizzle.
And I'm Sarah Huckabee Sanders. With Mother's Day just around the corner, it can be tough to get a gift for Mom.
Especially when she's the Altry.
Or Prince Andrew doing an elaborate drag deception, like my mom.
But no matter who your mom is, she'll love the Aura Frame.
Oh, what's an Aura Frame?
Aura Frames are a digital picture frame with free unlimited storage, so you can add pictures and videos as many as you want. All Mom has to do is sit back and enjoy.
I don't know, Wooldash Mizzle. My mom isn't techie, and she has very controversial opinions on which races should vote.
I bet she does, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I bet she does. But the first part is okay, because you can set up your Aura Frame while it's still inside the box. All Bob has to do is plug it in and enjoy.
Okay, what about the second part?
That is super not okay.
Whatever, Anderson Cooper over here, judgy.
Named number one by Wirecutter, you can save on the gifts moms love by visiting AuraFrames.com. And for a limited time, listeners can get $25 off their best-selling cover mat frame with code SCATHING. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code SCATHING. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
Aura Frames, the perfect gift for any mom.
Mine's a tree.
Yeah, you said.
And now, back to the headlines. In our lead story tonight, it's a strange new world where I have to come on this show and take the Pope's side one week, then a couple weeks later, I got to take the side of a fucking Mormon. But welcome to the bizarro universe of 2026, I guess.
Tucker Carlson. It's crazy.
Yeah, right. Because this week, we're going to lead off with a defense of John Dellen, who is a Mormon, if you ask him, and a no the fuck he isn't, if you ask the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Well, No, the fudge he isn't.
Well, yeah. No, fair, fair. Thank you. But yeah, so Dellen is the host of the long-running Mormon Stories podcast, which is critical enough of the church to earn Dellen an excommunication in 2015. And in 2026, their efforts to shut him up have graduated all the way to lawsuits for copyright violations.
Yeah, yeah. The LDS Church will not stand for anyone stealing ideas from holy books. That is a violation.
Exactly. Yes. They're like, okay, you didn't say you were going to tell those kinds of Mormon stories. Yeah. Damn.
Right. Now, to be clear, the lawsuit is meritless to the point of comedy. One of their arguments is that the podcast's title uses the word Mormon, and that's their word. Or a slur, depending on when you ask them. They also complain that his logo uses white letters on a blue background, and they kind of already had dibs on white on blue.
What?
Yeah. Yes, that's actually part of it. And if that's not silly enough for you, they also cite the use of copyrighted images to promote his show, like photos of Mormon temples. I guess he was supposed to build his own damn temples and take pictures of them. But of course, the point of the lawsuit isn't to win so much as it is to flex the fact that their church has countless billions and John Dellen does not.
Yeah, you know how Bigfoot often files a lawsuit when people don't use the blur filter on their photo?
Right.
It's like that. Mm-hmm. It's redacted. Yeah.
Literally the only thing about this lawsuit that isn't frivolous is its implications.
Right, yes. Right. So if you're unfamiliar with the Mormon Stories podcast, then you're almost certainly not one of our ex-Mo listeners. I don't know that I've ever met an ex-Mormon in the atheist spaces that didn't know about this show. It's the go-to resource for Mormons who are questioning their church's official story about for every fucking thing, right? Its origin, its history, its leadership, its arcanum, its interpretation of doctrine, its abysmal stance on LGBTQ rights, whatever. Now, to be clear, Dellen's goal when he started the podcast was to encourage people who are questioning their Mormonism to stay in the faith. He just felt like the official channels choked off discussion in a dangerous way, and he wanted to create a more open space to address people's concerns.
Okay, and to be fair to the Mormon church, he did end up realizing that Mormonism is bullshit. There's a reason we don't ask questions, okay? So, stay on task, okay,
but he
man.
Still considers himself culturally Mormon. Whatever the fuck that okay. means. Anyway, so obviously, once the show got popular, you see,
I love potatoes with cheese.
You're right. Like, I like mayonnaise. I still like mayonnaise. So obviously, once the show got popular, the Mormon church freaked the fuck out, and they've spent all the time since pretty much trying to minimize him in every possible way. This included making noise about his copyright bullshit starting February of this year. And for months, like, his lawyers and their lawyers went back and forth with Dellen making all kinds of concessions. Like, he added disclaimers that he wasn't affiliated with the church on all his social media spaces, and he changed the logo to an orange one since they own blue.
Yeah, nailed it.
Oh, that's so they're not the church
property
now.
Right there. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, orange is untouched territory.
I didn't know the Mormons owned AT&T. That's important to know. Yeah. I got to mention that.
But apparently that's not enough for them because, of course, this is actually about intimidation, so they sued.
Also worth noting, Dellen's underwear has never burst into flame. So that might be IP theft of those temple garments.
Right.
Ooh,
yeah. Added to yeah. the suit, guys.
Yeah, their argument at this point is that somehow someone might check the sixth page of Google results first, and that's infringing on their trademark, damn it.
Apparently, yeah. Now, again, the lawsuit is laughable. Not only are all the various points silly, but they're also true of like dozens, if not hundreds of other unaffiliated podcasts and blogs and YouTube channels and other media that they're not suing. Right. The fucking Broadway play is in more serious violation of any of this shit than Dellen is. And all of that undercuts the hell out of the church's vociferous claims that this is not just about going after their literal most effective critic on the planet. But that's OK, I guess, since everybody already didn't believe that.
Yeah, which if you think about it is a pretty Mormon story.
Oh, well, no, that's true. The most Mormon of stories. Yeah.
Can we change our logo to be blue on a white background just for this week, Noah? I don't know how to do that, but in solidarity. And in triple stamp, a double stamp news. In times like these, it's easy to ask ourselves, what the hell are we supposed to do? Now, some folks, like that guy at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, they have their answers. Not saying how I feel about those answers. I'm just saying a little cardio, if that's your plan.
Yeah, right. And if you do say how you feel about it, don't do it in seashells. They get really mad about that.
Yeah, Yeah, I'm going to come out against his idea. But yeah, if you're going to get better at balance, too. Apparently, he just fucking fell.
Yeah.
But bad. That's bad. It's bad to try to do that.
Yeah. A little bit of slackline work is all we're saying. Slackline. We're not. There you go. We're not here to judge. We're just saying a little bit of slackline.
In this hypothetical scenario, which is a bad idea.
Right.
Slackline.
But for others, the old schoolyard trick of rubber and glue seems to be working out pretty nicely. And we got yet another example of that this week as a Satanist in Colorado just won a religious exemption from her school's insane bathroom policy.
Wow. Yeah. And the Supreme Court is pretty sure that religious people don't have laws in Colorado. So
well, that's right.
The bind for the Christian right legal system, assuming they want to be intellectually honest, then I'm sure they do.
And they do. They love it. Yeah. So first off, a big thanks to Skater Boy for sending us this story to scathingnews@gmail.com. For sending us atheist news to scathingnews@gmail.com, we'll never say, see you later, boy. scathingnews@gmail.com.
You literally just said it.
Yeah.
Okay, it's neither here nor there. Right.
It's here.
So this story originates back in February when the Elizabeth school system in Elizabeth, Colorado, introduced a system called Minga that essentially offers digital hall passes. It tracks students who leave their classrooms to go off campus or to go to the bathroom. Now, students get to sign out on their own, and that's pretty cool. And then the system logs where they're going and how long they're gone, which is less cool. But the problem is that the system also limits how many kids can go to the bathroom at one time. So if there's a shortened class period, it denies students the right to go to the bathroom at all. And it informs students they have 5 minutes to go to the bathroom or face removal by the school's security guard.
They're going to remove him while they're going over on yeah, the, right.
while
the bathroom
they're
trip.
Going over, apparently.
Seems messy.
And look, I empathize with teachers dealing with bathroom shenanigans, but if the alternative is Skynet telling my kid he's been taking a shit for too long,
yeah,
I kind of need you to deal with some stall graffiti, guys. Sure. I get it.
Also, how else are kids going to know what number to call for a good time? Like, think it through. There's
right.
a lot of
Thank
things
you.
That
yeah.
you're
right.
messing and with here.
Look, as a certified penis haver, I want to warn you that we often have creative solutions to the you're not allowed to go to the bathroom right now problem that nobody's going to enjoy.
Exactly. Nobody likes that. And look, this policy had real consequences for the student in question. Thanks to fucking Poopatron's refusal, they weren't able to go to the bathroom when they had their period, which led to an embarrassing bleed-through incident. So the student's parents filed a religious exemption claim through the Satanic Temple. And on March 19th, it was granted, which is good because my next step 100% would have been take a protest shit on the principal's desk. So, you know.
Yeah, might even have wrote a song about it.
Yeah, and if Eli did that, there's going to be a good deal of bleed through there as well.
Exactly. That's mostly bleed through. The biggest concern the principal would have would be for my health. So consider that. And look, there are some who would point out that using the system of religious exemption is problematic, even when you're doing it for good stuff, because you're validating an inherently dishonest system, especially when most of the time that system is going to be used to prevent like kids from learning about gay people or whatever. But still others point out that since that system is being used and abused, we might as well take advantage of any resources we can to get justice. Either way, monitoring kids' bathroom use is weird. And so, podcast listener, if you have this at your school or your child's school, let me know. I will enroll, and my sheer volume of bathroom trips is sure to override their system in no time. It's what I'm calling a PPOS attack.
All right, well, Eli's going to need a minute to bask in his own brilliance after a PPOS attack, so we're going to take a break for a word from this week's other sponsor.
You're getting close.
Mint Mobile.
Moggin.
Okay, am I close to the bathroom now?
No, dude, I told you I'd tell you when we're there.
Hey, fellas, are you ready to record that? Jesus, Eli, what did you do?
Yeah.
Oh, this? Well, I like to keep my money where I can see it, so I stapled it to my eyeballs.
That looks extremely painful, man.
It was, Noah. Almost as painful as my cell phone bill from Big Wireless, am I right?
But Eli, why don't you just try Mint Mobile?
What's Mint Mobile?
Aw, no fair!
What? Your ears are fine.
It's true, they are. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. With Mint Mobile, you can bring your own phone number, activate with eSIM in minutes, and start saving immediately. No long-term contracts, no hassle.
Okay, have you actually tried it?
I sure have. I switched to Mint Mobile when they first became a sponsor. I love that I get the same great service for a fraction of the price. That's why I, no illusions, personally endorse Mint Mobile.
All right, Noah, I'm sold. Where do I sign up?
Well, if you like your money, Mint Mobile is for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/scathing. That's mintmobile.com/scathing. Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month 5-gigabyte plan required, equivalent of $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
All right, Noah, thanks.
So why did you use the big staples?
Oh, I had to get through the credit cards underneath.
Ah, I see.
This ad is yucky. Next up in headlines, in Decalogarithm News.
Nice.
The First Amendment got replaced by a higher power again.
Huh.
Exponent power logarithm. The First Amendment got replaced by that. Thanks to a federal court ruling last week, the public schools of Texas must display the Ten Commandments in every single classroom. Texas passed a law last year that requires a durable or framed poster with a size of 16 inches by 20 inches showing all 12 of the Ten Commandments as written in the King James version of the Bible.
Huh.
The law also included a stipulation that says the state attorney general has to defend any district that faces a lawsuit over blatantly violating the U.S. Constitution. That law was obviously absurd, and it got blocked by a lower court. But then Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton called for a review by the Federal Theocracy Court. It's called the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals.
That is what they do now, yes,
with
true.
12 of 17 judges appointed by Republicans. A panel of judges from that exact court actually agreed unanimously last year that a Louisiana version of the same law was very clearly unconstitutional. But Paxton demanded a redo with all 17 judges this time en banc. And they ruled 9-8 in favor of reversing the lower court and upholding that law in Texas.
Okay, all I'm saying is if Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas aren't listening, and we know that they are furious that you just called some other guys the Federal Theocracy Court.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Their sure. court.
That's true. I love that the law includes a, and we have to waste taxpayer dollars defending it clause, yeah. Right? They might as well include, and every time someone doesn't like the law, we have to throw $100 into the sea.
Right.
It's going to help inflation, will it? So we used to have a very sensible test for this at the highest level. It's called the Lemon Test. And it's based on a Supreme Court ruling in Lemon v. Kurtzman about the First Amendment and the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment being real. It said that any law must have a secular purpose, read real purpose. Mm-hmm. It can neither advance nor inhibit religion, and it's not allowed to create excessive entanglement between government and religion. Pretty simple and obvious. But then we forgot to vote for Hillary Clinton because she wasn't exciting enough to think about the decades-long consequences of allowing Donald Trump to pick Supreme Court justices. And now there's, well, no more bodily autonomy, and the Lemon Test got officially rejected in 2022. That's when the court ruled 6-3 that a public high school football coach has to be allowed to do Christian prayers in the middle of the field. The new test, instead of the Lemon Test, it says a law is cool as long as old-timey 18th century guys never objected to something similar.
Really?
And yeah, we didn't have a nationwide public school system until the 19th century, really the 20th century. So the required posters are legit because, you know, the framers never objected.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, the aphorism doesn't tell us to what to do when life takes away your lemons. And I'm also apparently not even allowed to spell it out in seashells, so.
Okay.
Cash Patel's right behind you.
To their credit, I know you like to harp on the third-party voter thing, Heath, but
he's vomiting.
Third-party voters did send us a message that they are as insensitive and evil as Trump voters and deserving of our hatred. And honestly, I didn't know that before 2016. So, thank you for educating me.
Cool. Yeah. They're actually worse because they should know better. So the other main argument from our theocracy court said that Christian views from the Ten Commandments are not being forced on anyone.
Huh.
They're not hurting anybody. Well, they're forced visually.
Sure.
But not like spiritually, sexually, you know, or with smell or taste or touch. According to the majority, quote, the Texas law does not tell churches or synagogues or mosques what to believe or how to worship or whom to employ as priests, rabbis, or imams. It punishes no one who rejects the Ten Commandments, no matter the reason. It levies no taxes to support any clergy. It does not co-opt churches to perform civic functions. These are the kinds of things establishment of religion did at the founding. Plaintiffs counter that the law is coercive because it pressures children to honor the Ten Commandments. Not so. It requires no religious exercise or observance. Students are neither catechized on the Ten Commandments nor taught to adopt them, nor are teachers commanded to proselytize students who ask about the displays or contradict students who disagree with them. End quote.
Jesus Christ. Listing all the ways they aren't violating the First Amendment is a hell of a strategy, right? Like a shoplifter pointing out all the stuff they left in the store.
Yeah. I mean, guys, would a real God not include rape, but include remember I have dibs on Sunday? If anything, these are atheist propaganda, right? Like, come on. Really think about this list of 12.
All right. So among the many critics of this stupid fucking ruling was James Tallarico, the Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate seat in Texas that's up for election in November. Tallarico is a Christian pastor, which I don't love, but unlike most of the Christian politicians in this country, his version of religion doesn't land on bigot stuff. Quite the opposite for him. In response to the ruling from the Fifth Circuit, he said, quote, I don't want anyone forcing their religion down my throat, and I certainly don't want the government forcing a religion down my throat. I'm a Christian, but I know that the most dangerous form of government is theocracy, because the only thing worse than a tyrant is a tyrant who thinks they're on a mission from God, end quote.
Yeah, not adding cough, cough, Red Cross Jesus, cough, cough.
Yeah. Also, you know what helps is that James is lying. Like, he believes in God the way my mom believes in my acting career. She says a lot of stuff, but like, we know James. And finally tonight, in Hell's Marching Orders news, Lieutenant Governor of Indiana and man who looks like he refers to himself as a tooth-whitening addiction survivor, Micah Beckwith, lost a fight to a high school marching band. Oof, this week.
Fantastic.
Proving once again that the bottom rung of the loser ladder will always be Christian nationalists.
Okay, I was in the marching band. This is the dream. Like, I'm picturing a big rumble, like a cartoon rumble. It ends with a sousaphone over his head.
Oh, nice. Trapped.
And he's running around,
right,
trapped
inside.
Every time
he breathes, you can hear it a little bit. Yeah. Now, curiously enough, the more Christian nationalists win, the bigger losers they become, right? It's the paradox of our age.
Yeah, yeah. So, first off, big thanks to Scorchfire for sending us this news to scathingnews@gmail.com. Yes. If you send us atheist news to scathingnews@gmail.com, we can't promise you'll be as awesome as Scorchfire. But we can promise that your email will inhabit the same inbox as theirs. And that's about as close to the sun as any of us dare fly. scathingnews@gmail.com.
All right. I'm tagging you in for the patron compliments this week, Eli. That was pretty solid.
I mean, Scorchfire did all the work for me. So here's the story. Westfield High School, just north of Indianapolis, has, at least according to the Friendly Atheist blog, where I read this story, a very strong competitive marching band and a relatively new indoor percussion team.
Side note, coaching an indoor percussion team in Indiana is where Morgan would go when he died if there was a hell.
Yes.
I'm just pointing that, yes, just that, is throw true. That out.
He's an outdoor guy. True.
If Satan is looking for any advice on what to do. With
yes,
it.
Like for tips when yeah. Morgan gets down there. So last month, that percussion team wrapped up their season with a few big competitions, performing a program called The Red Line.
Sounds satanic.
Which included music from the opera Carmen and Ravel's Bolero, saying of the program, quote, the red line follows a journey of knowing where boundaries exist, yet feeling an urge to cross them from the restraint of Bolero to the fire of Carmen. Fantasy and Capriccio Espagol. Restraint gives way to passion as precision collides with obsession, leaving us changed forever, end quote.
Wow, dangerous. That sounds like a direct call to assassinate the president musically. Directly calling for that.
All right, so but now I can see a lot of Christians reading that and going, okay, I am way too close to being able to jerk off to that indoor percussion description. That has to be of the devil.
It does.
That's not good.
And look, I want to be clear. I want to be fair. If Micah's problem was just that description of that band performance, I would join him hand in hand to bully these band nerds. But no.
You're going
to
get Susan.
No. Yeah, no. According to Beckwith, the performance was demonic because the children were wearing black eyeliner and their poster has flames on it. I included it in the notes. Christ.
Also, the same high school did a performance of Damn Yankees. I could swear that fucking Applegate guy was acting pretty demon-y.
Yeah. So here's what Beckwith had to say about the children dressed up like the opera Carmen. Quote, "This is Westfield High School. I'm starting to get the sense that schools like Westfield love giving the middle finger emoji to Christian conservative families of our community. Parents, use the vouchers and get your kids out of our Indiana public schools like Westfield. Their futures and their lives depend on it," end quote.
Their lives? I mean, I know I would regret it, but I kind of want him to take me there.
Yeah, I have so many questions about that statement. Like, I could spend a year on this. Why does he use the middle finger emoji instead of just saying giving the middle finger? Why is a public servant telling people not to use their tax dollars for the government that he works for? Why was he scrolling through pictures of high school bands?
That was my question.
I need answers and I have none.
Also, why the fuck do we have public school vouchers? I don't drive to work, but I don't get any highway vouchers because that would be insane. Like, I don't use any Gestapo services personally, but I don't get any ICE vouchers either. Oh, okay. Okay, maybe some vouchers could work, but the school ones are dumb.
I would take a Gestapo voucher.
Oh, yeah, no, we get ICE vouchers and then like have our ICE guys deport each other.
Yes.
That'd be awesome.
No, you're under arrest. No, you're under arrest. Well, luckily, for some clarification, Beckwith appeared on the conservative podcast News Mom with Kayla Blakesley.
Cool.
Spelled B-L-A-K-E-S-L-E-E, by the way, in case you're wondering. Yeah. So he appeared on her show to explain himself. Side note, podcast listener, do you know that if you're not following us, the Scathing Atheist, on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, you get us ever closer to the day when News Mom with Kayla Blakesley has bigger numbers than us? Do you want that to happen, podcast listener? No. No, you do not. Get on it.
Just a crazy double negative construction there. Follow us on video platforms, is what Eli's saying, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. What he's trying to say is don't not remember not to not like and subscribe. That's the
exactly.
Got it.
Smash that like button.
Smash. Don't not.
Smash it. Anyways, here's what Beckwith had to say on the podcast. Quote, "I was made aware of this from Christian students who attend Westfield, and they said they felt uncomfortable but didn't want to speak out because they were afraid to speak out. They were not being seen. They were not being heard. So I didn't go looking for this. It was brought to my attention," end quote.
Also, I was not searching for high school band, eyeliner, flames on specifically Bing. That's not my search engine. And I wasn't searching for, not doing that.
And my pants on the whole time
who asked?
Whole time.
Fully dressed.
I did have my pants.
He continues, quote, "When I looked at it, I said, yeah, this is demonic." And then we looked into it even more. And their theme for the drum line, let me explain this. It's the red line, and the red line follows the journey of knowing where boundaries exist, yet feeling an urge to cross them from the restraint of the fires of Carmen. The Carmen fantasy? Now, if you don't know who Carmen is, it's a fantasy novel.
No, it isn't.
Okay.
It's a character, and this is a woman. She's a seductive witch. That is what self-identified her job is in the opera.
Romani.
And they're actually playing music from is to seduce a husband and a father out of his marriage into an affair. So the music they're playing is from that opera, A Seductive Witch. Her whole goal is to try to get a man to cheat on his wife, to destroy their family. And Westfield tax dollars are promoting this? And we pay a lot of frickin' money in property taxes in Westfield, end quote.
So Jesus Carmen Christ. The witch seduces this guy, Don. But then she starts fucking this super hot torero named Escamillo. They fuck so hard, probably like so much cum, just like so much. And anyway, Don kills the witch. Anyway, the instrumental music from that opera is inappropriate.
What the?
For high school.
Those drums are too fucky is a new level of prudery even for Indiana. Congratulations, bro.
Right?
Well done.
So, as you can imagine, the lieutenant governor has received not a lot of support for his war on banned children, though I do imagine a lot of people have offered to explain the plot of Carmen to him. And it is, in fact, Westfield High School that has had an outpouring of support from the city, from the school itself, and from their instructor, even from the Indiana Percussion Association.
The Indiana Percussion Association.
Big win for the band nerds. And hey, Micah, if you ever want to pick on something a little easier to target than marching band nerds and eye makeup, give us a call. We've got some Christian movies that are kind of right at your punching weight. And we can start you with those.
Yeah. And with our weekly challenge thus submitted, we can wrap up the headlines for the night. Heath, Eli, thanks as always.
Jumanji.
And when we come back, we'll make hospice jokes, I guess. One of the most consistent secular arguments for religion is that it helps people deal with death. Now, to my knowledge, there's no actual evidence that this is true and plenty that it's false, including their own constant admission, which we're going to learn about again in this installment of
God Awful Minis.
So tell us, Heath, what will we be breaking down today?
We watched A Whisper of Faith. It's the story of an extra fun mysterious way from God called pancreatic cancer.
Yep, sure is the story of that. And Eli, how bad was this mini?
Well, if you love Christian cinema, and we do, but you wish it captured that weird 45 minutes that your aunt pretended she was religious while your uncle died, you will love this movie. Right. We've all been through this experience, right? Where like someone random in your family starts to die and for no reason, apropos of nothing, that family member is just like Jesus now. And you're like, oh no.
Always. I was always this
Couldn't
way.
You yep. shit yourself instead?
Yep.
Aren't you mad at that guy?
Have a affair or something, right? Please, I beg you.
So, okay, so we're going to clumsily stumble into this movie with a doctor telling the fam that cancer's dad cancer is cancering pretty bad now, so they're going to release him to hospice.
Yeah.
The doctor says it crazy, too.
Yes.
He's like, yeah, it's just fucking all over. Like, right. It's everywhere. Cancerorama.
He might as well say he has full-blown Z's cancer.
Right. No, he's like, at this point, really, you know, the cancer has Randy's, you know, I mean, it's so much.
He's more cancer than man.
Drowning.
He's just grabbing tumors like, look at this. It's like, wah, wah.
So
it makes
much.
Noise.
Yeah. Can I also point out that this movie is the most Florida movie I think we've ever done?
Yes.
Right. Everyone looks almost human, right? Grandma looks like one of those fish at the bottom of the ocean that's never supposed to see the sun. Mm-hmm. And granddaughter looks like someone cranked the neck attribute all the way up in her character creator.
Neck maxing.
Yes, neck maxing.
Yeah, yeah. And everybody's wearing like a Hawaiian shirt or some shit. And everybody's like incredibly like dangerously tan. Yeah.
Everyone's red. Everyone's that beautiful. You know how white people get old and they don't realize they can't tan? They just turn pink.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone in the movie is just a well-done lobster of pink.
There's one person who's actually tan.
But yeah. And I almost said Hawaiian shirt for like a best worst. I know we didn't do that this time, but like there's so many. Is it all?
It's a variety.
Old men in the entire American South are just wearing very large Hawaiian shirts all the time. That's the impression you get.
In Florida, yes. Yeah.
Anna bought me a Hawaiian shirt that had Madge's face all over it a couple of years ago, and I wore it so much she hid it. Because I can feel the pull of the Hawaiian shirts. Mm-hmm.
She doesn't want to wind up in Miami. No, I get
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
There's a bunch of flashbacks. This guy's got a Hawaiian shirt for each new flashback.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. So then we get our title screen. This is A Whisper of Faith. And we meet Dying Randy and we meet Lucia, the hospice nurse, who introduces herself way too cheerily for hospice introductions.
She comes in fucking hot. She's just like, hey, hospice nurse, what up? I'm Lucia, what up?
Beep, beep, coming through.
You excited to be single, girl? Am I right?
Who's drinking tonight? Well, the chemo bag. You can drink it.
Yeah, I'm gonna get on the apps.
I'm gonna disconnect your stuff so you can go home and
I'm gonna unplug you from life support.
Yeah. So now we've got a bunch of characters here, but we've got the wife here. This is Joni, who is in denial about the fact that Randy is dying. So we have this whole thing where like her sister's like, well, you know, he's dying, and she's going, dying for his recliner. I know he is. You know, we do that for like 3 minutes.
That's the thing, right? This movie is about a woman who's in denial and won't acknowledge her husband's death, but it's written by an idiot. So it seems like she's in dementia, not dying, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think her sister is like, hey, do you want to maybe spend some time with your husband, Randy, who's dying right now? And we'll like pack up stuff. And she's like, I'm going to get some snacks. See, anybody want like a Reese's from the machine?
They said I could get one of the Jell-O cups for free because they're sort of closing down the cafeteria for the lunch over switch. Mm. And I am not missing that opportunity. Randy, don't die on me.
Those are going to be old.
So she wanders off in dementia denial. And then fucking the pastor here, who I have is Father Margaritaville because of the shirts.
He needs to have a different shirt for this grave moment. It's way too loud. It's crazy.
Yeah, but he leads him in prayer. And then during the prayer, we shift to like our first flashback of cancer dad, pre-cancer, having dinner with the granddaughter that they raised as their own daughter after their kid died. Everything's so unnecessarily convoluted in this 30-minute video.
Don't worry. They're going to establish that 2 minutes before the end of the film.
Yeah.
You said dinner. They're having grace before sweet tea and lettuce, but it's
four leaves each. Also, they transfer from prayer to prayer in two identical white men in Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah, but they're different people. Yeah, it was different people
at different times. Yeah.
Especially if you're like looking down to type notes as you're watching this damn thing. Yeah.
It's very Tarantino-esque, this short film. Yeah,
yeah, very clever.
I've always said that about them.
So, but the grandma, Joni, is telling the granddaughter, Shelby, how happy she is she has a real job instead of being a stupid missionary wasting her one precious life spreading the word of Christ.
Ooh, all right, Joni, winning me over. One, you don't want to hang out with dying people. I get it. Two, missionaries are a waste of time.
Yep, yep. And speaking of being overly complicated, her job is that she's a cyber forensics investigator for cyber incidents. Like, she goes into this weird description and like, I'm like, well, surely at some point in this video, someone will need, you know, they'll be like, my kingdom for a cyber forensics investigator. But no, this never comes up again.
Never comes back. You can't introduce a spy and then not have a spy thing happen in your movie.
They call her a spy. It's like if we made a movie completely unrelated to our lives, but included the conversation we've had to have 100 times about, yes, I'm a podcaster. Yes, it's how I make my full-time
Right, yeah. Yeah.
In our action movie.
And then just like a ninja walks through and has like a normal 5-second conversation and is like, okay, poof, and that's it.
Well, that's right. So that's the thing is that this idiot writer thinks that's verisimilitude, right? The idiot writer is like, no, actually, because when my grandpa died, I was working as a cybersecurity investigator, whatever.
Yeah.
He did think I was a spy and I did have to explain it to him over the lettuce. Right.
So we get Randy back home in hospice. He's got the heart monitor going, and I'm just going to say, if I have to die to the sound of a heart monitor, I am going to take everyone in the room with me.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I already figured it out, Noah. We're going to get you a monitor that just every 11 minutes, it's going to really chilly say, he's still alive in Ray Porter's voice.
It's okay, no, that's good. That's good. I like it.
Okay, well, this guy who's dying in this movie anyway has to deal with the heart monitor beeping, which is annoying. But also, I'm pretty sure a gas-powered vacuum just out of the frame the whole fucking time.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how to do audio.
Oh, God, it's so bad. But yeah, so, and this is where we introduce the fact that he's refusing to take anything for the pain because he's too manly for that, you know?
Yeah, acetaminophen, because he doesn't want to die autistic because then Jesus
gets
mad at you or something.
Exactly. But now we also learn here that, of course, Joni, his wife, won't come to see him because she's in denial, not only about his death, but about his very existence at this point.
Existence. She's going to, I wanted this to spin up right into sort of a Harvey situation.
Yeah, right. Where she comes in, she's like, do you hear something? You know, or something like, yeah, right.
She sits on him. Oh, what a comfortable chair.
So then we flash back to the waiting room of the doctor's appointment where he learned about his cancer, right? And the doctor comes in to give his cancer diagnosis, which means that two times in the first 4 minutes of this video or whatever, we see this doctor tell this family that this man has cancer.
Yeah, but they ramped down the drama for their movie to do it a second time. And this scene starts with like stupid little puns between grandfather and granddaughter while they're sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the doctor has to walk in and be like, hey, stop. Stop doing puns. You have like so much cancer, like a crazy.
I get it. Open toed.
Transition's going to be weird.
Toed, but yeah.
Do you guys have a cancer joke that will lead in? To
I'll come. I'm going to set it up so it's a good bit.
Maybe a doctor joke.
But of course, this is where Joni's denial starts, right? Cause she's like, well, just give him the anti-cancer medicines. We'll pick him up on the way home and he'll be fine.
Yeah.
Making a big deal out of this one little tumor.
Well, get your cancer cream. I think it's OTC at this point. You're fine.
There you go.
Yeah, he explains how cancer treatment works. And Joni's like, or we get a vaporizer for the bedroom and see if it goes away on its own. I don't want chemo resistance in the community.
So, but of course, Randy, who is very devout, because we have to know he's going to heaven at the end of this thing so we won't get too sad. He says, to God be the glory upon learning he has cancer. So, okay.
I mean, that's not a to God be a glory moment, right? That's a, like a, everybody gets one moment, right?
Yeah, no, like best case scenario. It's like, okay, you got me with this one. All right.
Maybe a Poe Buddy's nerfect. That feels like a Poe Buddy's nerfect moment.
There you go.
The glory of like the intellectual property of pancreatic cancer that got
I guess.
Get that glory.
That is a big G original.
Yep. No, it is.
All right.
So, okay. So then we cut back to the now and the pastor is showing up at the hospice house. Right. Joni is still in denial. So the pastor's going to go talk to her and try to talk her into going and visiting her husband.
He's got a subdued Hawaiian shirt this time. It's in like muted blues.
Something a little bit more.
I could see why the first one went wrong. I really brought a lot of Margaritaville when I needed a lot more sitting in the rain.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is my funeral Hawaiian shirt.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. But he says, don't worry, you know, the fact that you're sad about your husband going to heaven is a contradiction that, you know, we as a religion have just agreed to ignore. You're fine. Don't worry about it at all.
Right.
Look, Jesus wept too, but not because he was a guy.
Not because he was a sissy. It was because
he loved PETA when he was here and he wasn't going to get to heaven. Why would he cry?
The pastor's like, well, so here the trick is don't acknowledge the existence of death at all. And she's like, no.
Well, and that's kind of what she's doing, but in a different way than he meant. She's just like, I'm fine. He's going to be fine. We got that cream from this Neosporin or whatever. He's fine.
The Vapo rub.
And everybody keeps bringing us like death cookies and death lasagna. It's bullshit. He's going to be fine.
You're going to make him die with all this lasagna. Yeah. And then so upstairs, we have the doc. He's telling Randy to stop being a dumbass and just take some fucking morphine already.
Hey, Randy, this is heroin. You know it's heroin, right? Like people, have you seen Soft White Underbelly? Heard, this shit destroys lives. You gotta.
I've heard it's like the best at first.
Yeah, right?
You gotta get it. No, time. It's the best all the way through.
Yep,
it's
you don't fine. Even have time to get to the bad part of it. So
get in there, Rand man.
Okay. Yeah,
I'd
love there. To, but I think I get extra credit for suffering. You just said you don't get that, but I think Jesus.
I'm telling you, you could go to heaven right now if you let me twist this knob. How about we destroy some rock and roll music together? You know what I'm saying?
He goes, why won't you take morphine? He goes, like, you know, religious bullshit and toxic masculinity mostly, I guess.
Mm.
Gentlemen, may I take a moment to make a request of you? Because for sure, I will be the first of us to die. And I need it to be very clear in this recorded format. Do not wait for my consent to give me all the pain medication. I need you to be pumped. You need to sneak from other patients into me.
There you go.
What the, yeah, I want you to uncork an old lady and give me her. Don't fucking wait around for me to do a double thumbs up. Lie. When he turns around, be like, oh, he just did like a, that's a spicy meatball. Let's get him all some right. of that's that. That's
a bit, Eli's got the like opposite of a DNR. He's got like a more, like a DMR, do morphine R. right away.
Well, I think that's a DNR too. It's a different strategy.
Yeah, no, just coming at it from a different direction. Yeah. And now is the time on Christian Movie when we yell at God. Specifically, we're going to have Joni. She's out in the backyard doing the honors, yelling at God for killing her husband.
Yeah. She's got like the splinteriest fucking cross I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Oh, that big cross that's behind her. Okay, so look, if you're going to go with a life-size cross on your property, I need it to look less functional.
Yes.
Yeah, that would hold somebody for
that
sure.
That looks like it looks yeah. used.
It looks
yeah. like
it looks very used. What a Jerry obviously
used
is.
Crucifix on Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah. It's very obviously someone wanted their fucking Cracker Barrel aesthetic to match their life-size crucifix. And they were like, don't you have something a little more rustic?
Yeah. Yep. So I wonder if they sell that at the Cracker Barrel. I'll have to check. But yeah, then so she's praying to God. And just then God lays a hand on her shoulder and we get all excited, but she turns around and it's her daughter, right? It's like an old man hand. And then she turns around and it's her daughter.
Aww.
And yeah. And she's surprised. She's like, oh, I thought you were God tapping me on the shoulder right after.
She says, oh, Shelby, I thought you were .. So how is that going to end? Jesus of Nazareth. Sounds stupid when I say it out loud like that. Yeah.
It feels like God would pop up in front of you and not like poof in behind you and sneak up.
Yeah. No.
I'd appear on the cross and then lower just to sort of as an establishing
shot. Oh, there you go.
Shot.
Right. Because it's right there. Yeah.
Come on. Remember this? Dramatic. This is my thing.
Remember when I did this to my son?
Remember?
Come on.
Or me.
So, but then Shelby comes in.
Why did I cry?
I knew about heaven. But yeah. So, but Shelby comes in and she's like, yeah, mom, I heard you screaming to God in the backyard. So I figured I should probably check on you. So we sit down on the swing and she asks, you know, why she's avoiding dad. And then we get this long, boring story about how they met when they were only 15 years old.
Yeah. Look, the greatest love begins when you don't know long division, everybody.
Yes. Well, so I wrote my notes up. That sounded fucked up to me until I remembered how old Lucinda was when we met. So.
Right. But so Joni's like telling the story of how Randy, her husband, has been awesome. Like back in the day, he came in and he had crutches. So she carried his books, but he, Randy, carries me spiritually, is what she says. It's like a fucking Pete Hegseth, Dr. Seuss speech. It's so
fucking, well, and then while she's telling us this, we're flashing back to like the Goofus and Gallant kind of thing where like he's being pious and she's being worldly, right? Like he's reading the Bible and she's reading novels and shit.
I did laugh at the shot of her reading the serial killer book and like munching popcorn.
Yeah, yeah right.
I like
right.
when he's like, I'm going to go to church. And she's like, Showcase Showdown. So.
Still on my jammies. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a repeat. I know it's a weekday show, but like, yeah, I want to see this. Yeah. I TiVo'd it.
He says, Randy handled all the faith in the house. And I wrote in my notes, I get it. My wife does the recycling and I'm not quite sure how I would do that when she wasn't around.
But yeah, so Joni comes to grips with the fact that he's going to die, I guess, as Randy's praying, right? We're cross-cutting between Randy praying that he'll have one more chance to say goodbye to his wife and her finally, like, I don't know, getting it or whatever. We're having our turn. So then Joni and Shelby head inside to see Randy, but just then, right before they can get in the room, he flatlines.
Oh, I was like, this is my favorite movie.
Well, so we all knew that God was going to bring him back for a goodbye. But yeah, if the credits had just run there, I would have been like, we got to do a different C-segment, guys.
We got to send this to somebody. This is a good prank to send to friends and family.
Right. So the flatline happens, and then the pastor who's right there, he screams, and the nurse and the doctor from hospice run into the room. And I don't think it's a sprinting emergency scenario.
No, it's hospice. No,
when there's a flatline in hospice care.
I feel like that's the first day as they go like, hey guys, we're taking it real chill.
Yes. Yes.
Right. But yeah, so everybody freaks out. And the movie is too dumb to even do the bit where like everybody gets down and prays and there's like, oh, if only we had one more moment with, and then he comes back to life. He just comes back to life as they walk in the room, right? The pastor literally is like, oh no, I'm so sorry. He's fine.
Yeah. Okay. That is the actual delivery. I need to be very clear. Noah is not exaggerating. It's he's gone. Never mind. He's fine.
Yeah.
And the hospice doctor is like, we have to honor his DNR. And then immediately it's like, okay.
God doesn't.
God refused to honor his DNR. It's good. It's cool.
Good, well, one, G.O.D.
God, to be clear, did a pump fake death.
Yes.
Back to life thing.
Just to fuck with Joni, right? As she's walking in the room.
He's trying to speed up the movie. I get it. He was bored like I was. Yeah, he was like, okay, like, yeah, Joni, a little faster.
The skating guys are going to be running over. But then, so he comes back to life long enough to deliver his very important last words, which were, you know, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Right. And then he dies for realsies.
Yeah.
But as he's dying for realsies, we see Jesus, like, you know, in light form, sitting in the chair playing Candy Crush while he waits.
Yeah. 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 Randy, he's just about to die. He looks over at a chair. There's some like steam or smoke over it and a light on it. So, yeah, Jesus is there. And they gave Jesus like a mediocre chair. It looks
that's a
like
crappy chair for our Lord and Savior.
Uncomfortable. Yeah.
He's in the cuck chair. I get it.
And then Randy's like, okay, ready for you to kill me. So I guess Jesus does that. And then Jesus goes away and turns off the light. Like he was like, oh, because sorry. Click. Okay.
He's pissed. Jesus is like, finally. Okay. I'm just going to say it. My parking expired, and if I have a ticket when I get out there, I'm having everyone Venmo me. Okay.
Do you validate? Or no, it's stupid. Sorry.
Yeah, but Randy like turns to Jesus and he says, like, yeah, I'm ready for the movie to be over. And I'm like, samesies, bro. And then we get Timothy 4:7-8. We get our Bible quote. And then we see that ghost him is still hanging out with her on the porch.
Yeah.
Oh, look, I love my wife, and I'm sure if there was an afterlife, I would like to visit her, but I would not want to sit there while she reads.
Yeah, probably not.
Just spending my afterlife being like, oh, you know what? Oh, you're listening to a podcast. Yeah. No, you don't have to pause it. It was just a stupid thing.
It's probably a really good part that has like a continuity to it.
It's not really worth it. It feels like not enough.
I stole a thing that Heath told me about a podcast when you're done with your
I'm gonna do the spelling bee.
And with a quick reminder that we do the same thing in long form every week over on God Awful Movies, we're going to wrap this thing up and hope Christianity remains full of shit for at least one more short.
Smash it.
Before we fritter away the rest of the day, I want to remind you that I'm going to be at BajaCon this year. That's the Blue Water Atheist, Humanist, and Agnostics annual conference in Ontario. I'm going to be there with Dan Barker, Eugenie Scott, Seth Andrews, Andrew Seidel, and a lot more. That's August 21st through the 23rd. You're going to find links for more info in the show notes. Anyway, that's all the blasphemy we've got for you tonight. We'll be back in 10,022 minutes with more. If you can't wait that long, be on the lookout for a brand new episode of our sister show, The Skeptocrat, debuting at 7 Eastern on Monday, an even newer episode of our sister show's Hot Friend, God Awful Movies, debuting at 7 Eastern on Tuesday, and an even newer episode of our half-sister's accreditation needed, debuting at noon Eastern on Wednesday. Obviously, I would wear a mark of shame forever if I neglected to thank Keith Henry for being the best, Eli Bosnick for also being the best, and Lucinda Lucians for being even better than that. I want to thank Eric for providing this week's Farnsworth quote and for sounding so damn Canadian while he did it. But most of all, of course, I want to thank this week's best bipeds, Jolly Bean, Rebecca, Hunter, Sam, a lawyer's favorite drink is a subpoena colada, Diner Max, Shelley, and Alex. Jolly, Rebecca, and Hunter, who are so bewitching, Jodie Foster would shoot a president to get their attention. Sam and a lawyer's favorite drink, who are so sharp I cut my lips on their names. And Diner Max, Shelley, and Alex, who are so hot they'll never know what an iced coffee tastes like. Together, these eight salacious secularists secured scathing scorn on the scurrilous scoundrels of sanctimonious sectarianism this week by sending us specie. Not everybody can do that, but if you can, please do. You can make a per-episode donation at patreon.com/scathingatheist, whereby you own early access to an extended ad-free version of every episode, or you can make a one-time donation by clicking on the donate button on the right side of the homepage at scathingatheist.com. And if you'd like to help, but Donald Trump is in charge of your economy, you can also help a ton by leaving a 5-star review, telling a friend about the show, and following us on social media. And speaking of social media, Tim Robertson hails that for us, and our audio engineer, Morgan Clark, who also wrote all the music that was used in this episode, which was used with permission. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the content from the content page at scathingatheist.com.
I was recording that whole time.
Were you?
Well, I hit it. I hit the button.
Jesus Christ.
This content is canned credentialed, which means you can report instances of harassment, abuse, or other harm to their hotline at 617-249-4255 or on their website at creatoraccountabilitynetwork.org. This podcast is a production of Puzzle and a Thunderstorm LLC and was created without the use of generative AI. Its contents may not be used for AI training. Copyright 2026. All rights reserved.